This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by ChristianAudio.com. Save up to 94% on more than 6,000 top Christian audiobooks and audio Bibles. Get them for only $7.49 during the twice-yearly sale before June 23rd at ChristianAudio.com. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. Today's podcast is a roundtable discussion with Tim Keller, Matt Chandler, and Michael Horton. They consider the question of how Christians who disagree should interact with each other about their disagreements.
How do we talk to people who differ with us about biblical and theological convictions without, in a way that's faithful, at the same time it's winsome and Christian? Is there a way to do that? What are your thoughts?
I think there's definitely a way to do it. It's been my experience that it works best in the context of relationship. And so I've never had an experience of just kind of lobbing grenades, that kind of thing working, characterizing a theological position. But really, I found that if you're in a relationship with a guy and have shown genuine concern for him and life and ministry, then those conversations tend to go much better. I think when you categorize someone too quickly and you don't have that relationship and you haven't got to the bottom of their motivation, because what you find I found in ministry quite often is guys who genuinely love the Lord and genuinely want to see people know and worship Jesus that have not for one reason or another either had the mentors that other guys have had or hadn't had someone love them enough to press them and go, well, what do you do with this text? Or what do you do with this idea? Or, you've got great horizontal theology, but you have poor vertical theology. And there's something about knowing the nature and character of God that really fleshes out things on the ground. And so, there are several guys I walk with now that we would be in different universes, in philosophies of ministry. And we're maybe in the solar system in certain theologies, but we would definitely have differences there too. But by loving them, knowing them, staying in contact with them, at trying to learn from them myself and what they do well, has really given us a platform to have that dialogue where it doesn't feel like they're being attacked or it's the reformed guys coming to get them again. And so that's been my experience to this point.
Yeah, I think I would just second what Matt's saying about the importance of wherever possible personal relationships,
yeah.
Because it's a lot easier to caricature somebody you've never met. And, I've had instances where I have maybe gotten someone wrong, not intentionally, but I've gotten that person wrong and have had a great conversation, started a friendship, and realized that was not exactly the position that he or she held. And, the ninth commandment. Mm-hmm. We've got to represent, yeah. Even our theological opponents in a way that they would recognize. I tell my students in class, if you write a paper where you are critical of a particular person, even if it's a well-known philosopher or, writer, you have to state the position in terms that person would recognize
yeah.
before you earn the right
Absolutely
to critique
right.
it.
That's one of the rules, I think.
Yeah.
And you're saying sometimes you actually don't do that well when you don't know the person.
It helps. Uh-huh. Yeah, it helps. And it helps also to critique. You can't have a personal relationship with everybody you critique,
yeah.
especially in writing. You know, it's hard to dig Schleiermacher up and, exhume him for interrogation. But, wherever possible, that actually changes then in the way you do things, I think, in the cases where you can't develop
yeah.
a personal relationship with people. It just right. changes you.
So you don't like Schleiermacher. I've completely misread you.
He's just not one of my favorite.
I've completely misread you.
See, relationship right
yeah.
here.
See?
Here we go.
I'm really glad I had this conversation with you. Yeah, I think one of the rules definitely is to say give the other person's argument position in a way they not only recognize, but in some cases might even say, that's as good as I could have done it.
Right.
And then when you start to criticize it, they feel like you've paid me the respect of really listening to me.
Yeah.
There's
right.
no doubt if a person, if I feel like someone starts criticizing me before they've really listened to me, then
I actually tend to write off the criticism, and maybe I should, because it's not really me. It's who they think I am.
Yeah.
I think another, it might be, here's another, what do you think of this as a rule of engagement? I heard that Archibald Alexander, who used to teach polemical theology at the old Princeton.
Not a great title.
I know. I think it probably meant apologetics, but I think it's a little broader, and it's not a bad idea. You're a seminary professor. Try to get that in the curriculum. Polemical theology. He said, do not assign a position to an opponent that he will not own, even though you think it's the necessary consequence.
Right. Now, see, that's something that I think even in our circles we have trouble with. And you see it not just in reform circles, but you see it in other circles where it's not the positions that are taken, it's what we think it will lead to.
Yeah. Right.
It's a slippery slope.
Now, say, here's what I think it will lead to.
That's
but
okay.
Don't describe the position as if it...
It's already led there.
It's already led there.
Exactly. So when you say, Mr. X, we think that your position will lead in a generation or so, or maybe in your disciples, to position Y. But what we have a tendency to do is we say, Mr. X, you really are teaching this.
Right.
And Mr. X is saying, I'm sorry, I hold this and this together, and I do not feel like this implies this. And that, again, makes a person feel like you haven't listened to me. Mm-hmm. Because you haven't listened to me, I'm not really going to listen to you. I mean, at least I'm having trouble really taking your criticism seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's interesting, too, that there's a sort of a paradox. We're relieved of the burden of having to save everybody because God is the evangelist, and he's going to use our evangelism to bring people to Christ. We're a lot more impatient with Christians.
Others.
Oh, yes. And actually more impatient with Christians who are closest to us.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about it that that I'll tend to be, being a Presbyterian and being in the PCA, I will probably be a little more impatient with my own denomination people. Whereas because you're in another branch of Reformed Presbyterianism, and because you're not in Presbyterianism, I'm going to cut you breaks, I think, and say, well, of course, I mean, why should he? But because you're in my denomination, you should know better. And that's pretty patronizing. It's actually patronizing to you. It's also, there might be something emotional going on there rather than just theological that I feel like you betrayed me a bit because I got into this denomination and I thought everybody would think like I do.
Yeah.
And so it gets complicated, but we have to be careful about being more strident and almost nasty to the people who are closest to us.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I've seen it doesn't help anything is that people get judged, pastors get judged on a theological position based on a 5-minute soundbite, a 5-minute YouTube clip.
Yeah.
And so then they get put in this kind of, this is where you stand, this is what you believe, this is what, and maybe they were using hyperbole, it's a 50-minute sermon, 5-minute clip, and then there are all these judgments that begin to roll out based on a 5-minute clip, or did you hear what he said? Well, he said this, and this is where he stands. And if you wouldn't watch the clip, there might be things in there leading to that, but if you don't, if there's not a body of work to judge it by, I think we can get ourselves into...
Here's an observation, and I'd love to hear what you both think about it. I see you Matt, you are still you're in the internet world where debates are going on online.
Yeah.
Even though you are there, Michael, you are also, you're a published author, and so your books get reviewed. What I liked about the old approach was there was some time lapse.
Sure.
But a book comes out, and then it takes 2 years before the reviews come in. Some of them might be pretty nasty, but very often you can call those people up, and then you can, and it's measured what you say back.
Yeah.
The trouble with the internet age is it's like lightning, and you see an awful lot of, well, you're breaking all those rules when it comes to positing bad motives to people when you shouldn't, positing positions they don't own, like Archibald Alexander said you shouldn't do, not putting in any way the position of your opponent in a good light, but even putting a straw man up. My feeling is the internet is Alan Jacobs said the internet is the friend of information and the enemy of thought.
That's
a good place to get information, a terrible place to do debating.
Yeah.
I'm tending to feel that way, though other people say you're not being open to the future. What do you all think about that?
Well, I mean, A, I think it probably is the future, but
yes.
B, I would agree with it. I have found the internet to make quiet people extremely brave. and people who are not informed, really emboldened in their opinion, and the ability to add things and say things anonymously, where you used to be able to, you know, just kind of look and say, oh, they didn't sign it and throw it away. Now you've got, you know, I mean, just weird avenues and venues for people to take shots at, other people and, without having any credibility themselves, without, you know, maybe having left their basement in 2 years without, you know, it's a weird, weird world out there right now because of the internet. I'm not saying it wasn't weird before. I'm just saying the weirdness before probably would have got filtered before it got to you. And now it's right there before you even release it.
You're more in both worlds, Michael, aren't you, somewhat?
Well, I barely know how to turn my computer on.
I know, but your presence, I mean, I guess on the internet, your stuff's debated. Anyway, I'm just curious what you think about
it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to have people like Matt provide a model for doing it. Because if there aren't people with values about how to use the internet, then it is going to just be all Wikipedia. And I agree with you, though. I think that there is an amazing ability now for us to cross-pollinate, to talk to each other and get to know each other in ways that we couldn't have before. We were like in silos.
True.
But also to skate along the surface and just surf for our thought and identities.
Yeah.
And if we know what it does and it doesn't do, I agree. Reading is never going to go away because there's something about juried conversations where you just have to you have to change the way you speak and you have to sort of get through the vetting process. And I think that's something that I think all three of us could attest to examples of being the brunt of not very critical thinking. And it's the sort of thing that people might do over coffee, just sitting around talking. But now that kind of conversation often is found on the internet, at least as responses to blog posts and so forth.
Yeah, and you can't read tone. You can't read. I mean, it just changes the game.
But, you know, I was recently talking to my editor or publisher in Penguin Dutton, which is not the Christian world. It's the mainstream world. He said something interesting to me. He says, ironically, for all the fears everybody have that books are going away and, you know, reflection is going away, and you know, writing reviews and taking time to reflect, it's all going to be internet, ebooks, these you know, everyone will write their own reviews eventually of their own book. He says, weirdly enough, he says more people are reading than ever. There's more books sold than ever. There's more books being published than ever. And he says, to a great degree, the internet is driving that. You can get a book out to a group of people better, and it can be discussed there, and then it can get people to read it. And so there is probably a good interactive way in which the internet could make theological debate better than it has been.
An editor is going to say, you can't say that. You've got to change this, that, or the other thing. And as long as you have responsible people on the internet vetting the things that are said on their site, that's fine. But if it's wide open, and everybody is his or her own editor, I think it's that's a fundamentally different dynamic.
Right.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org.